Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours.
March 8th, 2019, thank you for joining me yet again. And to begin, I wanted to point out that I had an excellent interview that I recorded yesterday that I put out live today as a premiere that I really hope everybody will take a moment and check out. It's on for many, it's on kind of an obscure topic, but I really recommend you take a look. Truly, anything that Eva Bartlett is investigating and researching is something that we should be paying attention to. And this is about the story of Kirill Vyshinsky, who is a Russian Ukrainian journalist who is being held without trial for over 10 months now in the Ukraine. And of course, because the Ukraine being a U.S. vassal state that was, you know, Poroshenko being put in power in 2014 by the United States, they don't seem to care when a journalist in that regard gets shut down and arrested without charge and persecuted, but anywhere else, or rather a U.S. adversary does something like this. And oh, we have to care about this because we're the moral authority, but we choose to ignore this one. Great interview. I really recommend you check it out. Eva Bartlett always does an amazing job. And of course, we have, she's going to be in Venezuela in an upcoming week, and we're going to be trying to touch base while she's on the ground in Venezuela so we can further discuss what's going on there. So I hope that we can make that happen, as well as another one about Syria, because she's got a lot of great information there. So stay tuned. Always a lot of great information coming your way. But let's get right into it. Speaking of Venezuela, for the first story of the day, something that I was assuming, because of how obvious this is, but he was being taken out of context, or they were putting this phrase on what he was saying, you know, kind of saying, you know, paraphrasing what he meant to say. But this is straight up what he said. Marco Rubio, in a hearing, said that he's demanding the U.S. initiate widespread unrest in Venezuela. That is a quote from a U.S. congressman. From a government that is currently standing on the claim that they're doing everything they can to help these people, and that none of the problems has anything to do with what the U.S. is doing, yet at the same time we have him saying we want widespread unrest, as if that's not going to hurt the people. Does he mean widespread unrest within Maduro's home? No, he means widespread unrest in Venezuela. Because causing that unrest, they can then turn around and point to say, look at how bad Venezuela is. We need to go help them. Even though we literally just said we want to create the problem that we're pointing to right now. They really bank on the fact that Americans don't have a long memory. This directly contradicts everything they've been saying. And they'll just, you know, backtrack later and say, we didn't mean unrest for the people. Of course not. We didn't mean that. But this is what they're talking about. This is meant to be heard by Venezuela's government. So they recognize that this is what they're trying to do. This is an open threat, just like the one Maduro recently did, the one that Marco Rubio recently did by tweeting out a picture of Gaddafi alive and then dead, saying this is what will happen to you if you don't listen to what our regime is trying to tell you to do, which is just get out of the way so we can control your country. This is an alarming story. Now, during a Senate Foreign Relations Committee hearing on Thursday, just yesterday, Republican Chairman Marco Rubio condemned Venezuela's leader Maduro as a clear danger and, quote, threat to the national security of the U.S. Again, this is now being reasserted, just like Obama did when he first declared Venezuela such a threat, that they are a national security threat. I challenge anyone to show us how what they're doing is a national security threat to the United States. It's simply not. They'll try to bend it into that because they need to make it so they can justify what they're doing, but it is not. There's no evidence to support that claim. But what was unexpected was how open and brazen Rubio was about his admissions in all of this and how far he's willing to go in promoting regime change in Venezuela. In public testimony, he called on the U.S. to promote, quote, widespread unrest in order to eventually bring down the Maduro government. There's really no misunderstanding what he's saying right there. Now, not only that, the idea of literally promoting widespread unrest generally for the very people they pretend to be fighting for was met with general approval by the U.S. Congress, which should show us again the reality of what's actually going on and the reality of what these people are actually trying to accomplish. And at what expense? Widespread unrest for the people they pretend they're trying to fight for. It is staggeringly obvious. Now, it appears Rubio is now urging the White House to initiate a full-on, quote, Syria option for Venezuela, which implies covert arming, funding, and militarization of the opposition to reach peak escalation and confrontation with the government. Perhaps inviting broader external military intervention, similar to efforts to topple Syria's Assad over the past years. Now ask yourself this, if we get to a point where all of a sudden they're now justifying that we need to be arming these rebels that are fighting for freedom, like they did in Syria. Ask yourself if they'll then go back and admit that this whole time they've been trying to put in weapons right now. They won't, of course. But this is always how this goes, that we can look back and see clearly that what we thought in the beginning that we were called conspiracy theorists for pointing out ends up being the case. And they're clearly doing this now. Now, as Ben Norton also pointed out on Thursday while speaking of using, quote, humanitarian aid as a pretext for regime change, quote, they're not even hiding it at this point. And another excellent tweet literally says, he says, they're not hiding it at this point. Venezuela's U.S.-backed neoliberal opposition leader, Antonio Ledezma, is openly admitting that the strategy to falsely claim Venezuela needs humanitarian intervention on R2P grounds, or right to protect grounds, just like Yugoslavia and Libya. It's just, it's unbelievable that they're openly, this is right out in the open today. That's what we need to realize. This is right out in the open, that they're not even hiding this anymore like they used to, which is what's important to remember. Now, Rubio personally promised exactly what we're talking about right now in this hearing. Quote, to those in Venezuela, your fight for freedom and restoration of democracy is our fight, and the free world has not and will not forget you. He said, and adding, quote, we, the United States, will be focused on this as long as it takes. Of course, earlier in the day, Rubio told Fox News, quote, Trump won't give up until Maduro is gone in Venezuela. Now, more ominously, Rubio predicted during the hearing, quote, Venezuela is going to enter a period of suffering no nation in our hemisphere has confronted in modern history. So, right out saying Venezuela is about to have enter into a period of suffering they've never known. Of course, Rubio laid all the blame for that dire future plight on common Venezuelans on Maduro alone, and not his own admitted desire to stir yet another more unrest in the country. They're basically saying we want to cause all these problems, and then saying they're going to have more suffering they've ever experienced, but all that is going to be on Maduro, even though we just said we want to cause all these problems. I mean, it's. You can't make this stuff up. I mean, this is almost comical how ridiculous they're being. Now, of course, we have Mike Pompeo stepping right in lockstep. First, what you can say, the power outage and the devastation hurting ordinary Venezuelans is not because of the USA. Of course not. About a power outage. Of course, the sanctions and the efforts and even their subversive actions that probably caused it, yeah, it has nothing to do with the United States. He goes on to say it's not because of Colombia. It's not Ecuador or Brazil. Europe or anywhere else, power shortages and starvation are the result of Maduro regime's incompetence. Well, Mike Pompeo, what's causing the starvation and power shortages and cholera and all the other things going on in Yemen? Oh, but I guess, oh, sure, we're not supposed to talk about that, right? We're only focused on Venezuela and what you're doing there. I see. We'll come back to Yemen and we'll touch base later. Because obviously, they don't talk about these things. The obvious contrast between the things they're claiming is so outrageous happening over there and in Venezuela, and they're clearly involved in it, but yet ignore what they're doing very clearly somewhere else. It's just stupid. And he goes on to say, Maduro's policies bring nothing but darkness. Finally, the big ominous tweet, no food, no medicine, now no power. Next, no Maduro. As somebody puts in the comments, he's starting to sound like a Bond villain. I mean, this is ominous stuff here. These are our congressional and political leaders. They're outright threatening these people. No food because of the sanctions and blockade. No medicine because of the sanctions and blockade. Now no power, arguably because of everything that they've been doing and probably because of something they just did, as in the United States and their powers. Next, no Maduro because they're threatening to kill him. We can't be okay with this as Americans. They are now openly saying we are going to take out Maduro and that we're going to cause so much unrest in the country that it will cause Maduro to either leave or be taken out. And understand that in and of itself is exactly what they pretend they're not doing. If you point out that sanctions cause this, they say, no. The sanctions attack Maduro. It will hurt the people. We would never do that. And then they come right around and say, we're going to cause so much unrest that it's going to just devastate the country and make Maduro leave. It is so obvious. that you have to really try not to see what's happening. Now, in addition, something somebody just pointed out to me, 5.8 million Colombians are currently living in Venezuela, who have in fact fled Colombia and the violence there. Of course, mainstream media won't point that out. This is something that we pointed out in numerous shows in the past, that Colombia has currently worse problems than Venezuela does, and they just don't talk about it because Colombia is willing to bend the knee to the United States, and they give the leaders whatever they want, and the people continue to suffer. You see, the United States doesn't care about the suffering people. It cares about controlling the leadership. That's what matters. And hopefully we are beginning to recognize this from all of the things that we've talked about on this show and all of the information about Venezuela that is starkly obvious from all the experts pointing it out. The only people that don't understand what's going on are those that blindly listen to mainstream media and blindly listen to what their government tells them they're supposed to be thinking. I would probably say people that are not very smart. That's what it seems like to me. Sorry to insult anybody out there, but that's the reality. Anyone today that blindly takes what someone's telling them without any due diligence and any research, those are the people they're trying to make all of us just like that. That's what all of this agenda is about. It's very sad. So clearly we're going to see this continue. They are failing with what's going on in Venezuela, and now they're clearly trying to force their foot further in the door because they're failing. It's not working, and they do not have the support they pretend they do, either with the world, as in the vast majority of the world currently supports Maduro or acknowledges him as the legitimate president, and even the vast majority of Americans and the vast majority of Venezuelans do not agree with what they're doing. So again, ask yourself why they're doing it. Simple. As a representative government, they're supposed to be, right? They're supposed to do what we want. But, you know, anyway, it's ridiculous that it continues on. But let's jump to the next story. Another one, something that would follow up, a story that I've actually covered twice, I believe, but I felt it very important to go through this information yet again. Of course, we're talking about a U.S. ally. Same scenario without, you know, carrying this stuff out with impunity. But it's specifically in regard to Israel. It has become much more of a prominent topic. And that's because of independent media. But of course, we have people like Meghan McCain on The View, such a fantastically informative political show. Hopefully you can recognize I'm being sarcastic. Bloviating about why are they so focused on this little small country of Israel, the same topic they always say, making us out to be bigots for pointing out their crimes. Who cares how small they are? They're murdering people. We should be talking about it. But they continue to point out that it seems like there's an agenda here why they're only talking about Israel. Point of fact, we're not only talking about Israel. We're talking about Saudi Arabia. We're talking about the United States. We're talking about UAE. We're talking about all of the countries involved in this. They just don't want to hear that because the Israel idea has been forced into the topic, and it is a linchpin in all of it. But as we have people like Meghan McCain crying, you know, faking crocodile tears about all this that's going on, it's stories just like this that show us why we should care. Put all the other political crap aside. If you can look at what we're about to talk about here and pretend that we don't have a legitimate reason to be critical of Israel, then you are blinding yourself to what's really going on. Entitled, A Peek into the Horrific Findings of the UN Report on Israel's Massacre of Gaza Protesters. Now, again, the UN report, we've talked about it at least twice already on this show in the past week. A report that came out that said, our report from the collective United Nations acknowledged that they intentionally shot journalists and children. Hundreds of them. Thousands, really, but in this report, it was about 189 that they looked into. That is a war crime. And the United Nations, which is supposed to be this managing international body that can actually enforce these things, was supposed to be the kind of all that, if they say that, then that's a big deal. But today it only matters if the United States and Israel say something, right? The United Nations screams at their feet and they just tell them to shut up. That's what continues to happen. How many times have we seen these UN reports about Israel that may have committed war crimes while looking at war crimes and then nothing happens? It's not the first time. But the point is, this is getting attention today where it hasn't in the past. And again, let's look into this because this article by Robert English, fantastic, dives into the information around this, which is a big deal. Now, the United Nations Human Rights Council released this powerful report. And if you haven't read it, I really recommend you look into for yourself. Of course, on Gaza and the Great March of Return demonstrations, stating that they have grounds to believe Israel committed international war crimes against demonstrators during these civilian protests. Now, the 22-page document has been condemned, of course, by Israeli government, as there is talk of Israel being brought to the International Court of Justice and tried for war crimes and violations of international law against demonstrations that were, as the report says, civilian in nature. Now, it says the commission conducted 325 interviews and meetings with victims, witnesses, government officials, and members of civil society from all sides of the argument, and gathered more than 8,000 documents, including affidavits, medical reports, open source reports, social media content, written submissions and expert legal opinions, video, drone footage, and photographs, all of which tell you that they intentionally shot children and journalists at the very least. Now, here are the most important points concluded in this report that I really want you to take to heart. Again, a collective report from the United Nations, hundreds of nations collectively reporting on what's going on and looking into the crimes of Israel. Now, because of a couple of militarily strong countries that want to tell you not to listen to this, think about the reality that most everyone agrees that this is what's really going on. Now, these are the most important points he found in this article. The commission for this report found in the killings of 189 demonstrators, of thousands of killings, mind you, between the 30th of March and the 31st of December in 2018, 183 of 189 were killed with live ammunition, including 35 children, 3 health workers, and 2 members of the press. Just in this period, mind you, there's countless more journalists and doctors and medical workers that have been shot. And it goes on to say only 29 of those killed were members of Palestinian armed groups, which is what they try to claim about everybody. This is from the United Nations. Only, and again, I should point out, it doesn't mean that I think we should trust the United Nations by far in the other direction. But that means that this has weight for people that don't know better. And it goes on to say only 4 Israeli snipers were lightly injured. None were killed by demonstrators. So of these 189 people shot, none of these, no casualties of whatsoever on the other side. This is their defending themselves lie. 23,313 Palestinian demonstrators were injured. 23,000 during the 2018 demonstrations. 6,106 with live ammunition. Quote, contributing to the highest toll of injuries recorded in the occupied Palestinian territory since 2005. Clearly they're feeling like pretty brazen in what they're able to do these days, I would say. Now, on the killing of child demonstrators, the commission found, quote, reasonable grounds to believe that Israeli snipers shot them intentionally, knowing they were children. On the killing of health workers, the commission found reasonable grounds to believe that Israeli snipers intentionally shot health workers, despite seeing that they were clearly marked as health workers. On the killings of journalists, and these are all quotes, mind you, the commission found reasonable grounds to believe that Israeli snipers shot journalists intentionally, despite seeing that they were clearly marked as journalists. The commission found that both male and female protesters were shot in the groin. The female victims told the commission that they are now, quote, likely to be unable to have children. The policy of the Israeli Minister of Defense was to deny passage to any person injured during the demonstrations, causing unnecessary deaths and life-changing injuries. Basically, they shoot someone and then leave them to die in the middle of the field, not allowing them back in. Ask yourself why that would even be something they would do. It's because it's malicious. There's really no other explanation there. Now, according to the commission, except in 2 possible cases, quote, the use of live ammunition by Israeli security forces against demonstrators was unlawful. That is a direct quote. Not maybe, but absolutely was, except for 2 cases. Unlawful, according to the United Nations. So right there, why is they not being held to crime, to criminal charges right now? This body found that it was unlawful. Nothing happens. There's your answer to what's really going on. Now it goes on, Israel used a, quote, disproportionate use of force. That's an understatement. The demonstrators, quote, were shot in violation of their right to life or of the principle of distinction under the international humanitarian law. The commission found, quote, reasonable grounds to believe that the excessive use of force by Israeli security forces violated the rights of thousands of demonstrators who were peaceful. The commission found, quote, reasonable grounds to believe that Israel violated the Convention of Rights of the Child. Violations of international law, such as those committed by Israeli security forces and set out by this report, give rise to state responsibility. And it goes on from there. But this is what he found to be the most important aspects of the report. Now, just think about what was listed right there. The powerful nature of this. And again, recognize that not a single mainstream media pundit in the West has talked about this. Not a single U.S. politician has talked about this. I mean, what more do we need to see? This is massive. This is on its face exactly saying these people are breaking the law, and here's all the evidence of countless crimes, of war crimes, of human rights violations. and nothing. This is why the UN fails. This is why someone like Alfred de Zayas can go to Venezuela and come back with a massive report that shows you, look, the US sanctions caused all these problems, and they just shove it under the rug and ignore it. Because it doesn't suit the larger agenda of those who are controlling all that we're looking at. That's what's going on. Now, the often repeated Israeli claims of the protests being inspired and organized by Hamas terrorists, which we always talk about, that's their scapegoat in this area of the world, is, oh, Hamas. That's what it is. They're involved. They did it. They fought. They were in the protest somewhere, so we murdered all these people. And we're defending ourselves. Always what they say. Of these repeated claims, we're also addressed in this report, which stated, and this is what's very interesting, that this whole report is annihilating all of the narrative that they're pushing forward about Israel-Palestinians that the U.S. supports. The report stated the demonstrations were inspired by the internet posts of 34-year-old Palestinian poet and journalist Ahmed Abu Atema, with the demonstrations being organized by, quote, a higher national committee and 12 subcommittees, basically saying, yeah, your claim that these are organized by Hamas are absolutely false. The report went on to say, quote, that while the members of the committee held diverse political views, they stated that their unifying element was the principle that the march was to be, quote, fully peaceful from beginning to end, and demonstrators would be unharmed. But of course, Israeli forces shot them anyway. Now, activities such as the use of incendiary kites, which is a huge issue today, even though they caused minimal damage, of course, and, you know, cutting barbed wire, setting tires on fire, were organized by, as they say, quote, self-declared units. Thank you for the super chat. Now, the report further states, quote, the commission found no evidence to suggest that they were direct or coordinated by armed groups. So all the claims of, like we just talked about, setting off an incendiary balloon and them shutting down the border, basically hurting the entirety of the population because of some individuals acting. And now the report says again, despite Israel's claims, these are individual self-declared units organized doing their own thing, not coordinated armed groups. Pretty simple. Burning the entire U.S.-Israeli narrative. The commission interviewed what it called an international journalist who said, quote, I have covered wars in Syria, Yemen, Libya. Quote, I have never seen anything like this. The slow, methodical shooting. It was just shocking. Anyone that's been there can see it, and that's why they shoot journalists, because they come and report stuff like this. The commission also noted that Israel refused to assist with the U.N. investigation and did not, quote, cooperate or provide any information. And of course, it's now saying it's all lies and political bias. All the evidence and images and video of us shooting people, it's just political bias. Yeah, I shot the guy in the head, but they're lying about the fact. It's just, it's ridiculous. There's evidence showing what they did, and they're still pretending that it's not real. They always bank on the fact that you'll simply believe what you're being told, like we were propagandized to from our Prussian school-based system. We're growing up through indoctrination centers in this country, teaching us to be passive and just take what we're being given. Thank you, Mr. A, for the super chat. I appreciate that. It's a sad story. Now, I'm sorry to rehash that yet again, but I felt that was important. All of that information is impossible to ignore, as I said before. If you can hear all of that and go right back to thinking that we're being lied to about Israel, you are just simply ignoring what's really happening right in front of you. And moving on to the next story, and this is something about another U.S. ally. We should just call this today the U.S. Allies Exposed show. This is about Saudi Arabia. And if, again, this relates to U.S. tax dollars. Well, so does Israel, of course, as we're sending, what, $7,000 a minute over to Israel, that when the Americans could use that money, and we're sending it to a country that's committing some of the worst human rights violations and war crimes in the world today. Yeah, don't worry about that. Let's just attack Venezuela for things we can't prove. But this is about Saudi Arabia. And Americans spending $1 billion for their missile defense system. But guess what? You'll never hear that unless you watch the independent media, because they don't want you to know. People, the Americans today would not be happy once they found this out. And they will eventually. U.S. taxpayers on the hook for nearly $1 billion in Saudi Arabia's recent missile defense purchase. Now, this story is frustrating because this is basically the U.S. bending over backwards to make sure that Saudi Arabia uses the THAAD missiles instead of the Russian S-400s or 300s, or I think it's at least 400s. That is the point. And so this is essentially them paying them to maintain this deal, which shows you that this goes so much larger than really profit for arms sales, but more so about a larger military industrial complex control structure of the world and all the arms sales and buyers. And this is what we're looking at. But the bottom line, what this cuts to the heart for Americans, is that we're another $1 billion going out the door, right? There's one seventh of the money we could, that Trump could have used for the wall. if you wanted that. But the point is, there's just $1 billion out the door for something the Americans do not care about or want, which is a missile defense system for Saudi Arabia. Now, on Monday, in an all but unreported news item, I didn't see anybody really talk about this, the Pentagon announced that it would be paying $946 million to Lockheed Martin toward the installation of a missile defense system that was purchased, not by the United States government, mind you, but by Saudi Arabia. So now, the United States is paying Lockheed Martin to produce a missile defense system that they're going to be giving to Saudi Arabia. That makes sense. How is this in any way, shape, or form something Americans' tax dollars should go towards? Ask yourself that question. Now, the Pentagon is paying nearly $1 billion to subsidize a purchase made by a foreign power. Pretty simple. Now, in its announcement, the Pentagon referred to the payment as an finitized contract action. Undefinitized, excuse me. Basically saying that, you know, it's an ongoing action of this contract that would be used in part to prepare Saudi Arabia's current missile defense system for the installation of the $15 billion Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System, the THAAD system, manufactured by Lockheed Martin. Now, the Pentagon said the payment was intended to prevent major delays in the delivery of the production of the THAAD system, sure, suggesting it was likely a hedge against past Saudi interest in the THAAD's main and of course, cheaper competitor, the Russian-made S-400. Now, where it gets interesting is when you think about the fact that one likely explanation for the Pentagon's willingness to pay such a significant amount to subsidize the Saudi THAAD system is the fact that the Saudi government had intended to purchase the cheaper and more effective Russian-made S-400 instead of the THAAD system. Now, this is a story we've covered in the past. The reality that the heralded foreign policy success of the Trump administration about making this massive deal with Saudi Arabia was basically a lie. It was an agreement that wasn't finalized. And Saudis later said, well, we're kind of changing our minds, even though Trump administration has sold it as this big success that was going to happen. All of a sudden, we saw the Saudis kind of going, well, the S-400s are cheaper, more effective. We should just go to that side. And the United States kind of freaked out about it and threatened them in regard to oil sales and all kinds of things. And then, of course, just 2 days after the THAAD deadline passed, which it was there was a deadline where the Saudis had to agree to either buy them or not. The deadline passed, which made it seem like they weren't going to. And they were leaning towards Russia and S-400s. And 2 days after it passed, Saudi journalist Jamal Khashoggi disappeared. Now, of course, the uproar of Khashoggi's death, which appeared to have been, in part at least, influenced by Saudi's lack of interest in the THAAD system, eventually pressured the Saudi government enough to sign letters of offer and acceptance for their purchase of 44 THAAD launchers, missiles, and related equipment in November. The point being that the United States clearly used this entire thing. You should ask yourself, maybe orchestrated the whole thing to begin with. I have no evidence of that, but that's something we should always be asking ourselves, and use this to pressure the Saudis to go back to buying the THAAD missiles. And clearly it worked. And now they're doing so. But now clearly they're giving the idea is that they basically pushed them into buying a more expensive, less effective weapon. And they're clearly now giving them money to offset the deal. Now, in order to, of course, entice the Saudis to buy American, more than just political pressure appears to have been needed. And it's likely that the U.S. officials offered this massive amount of money from your taxpayer dollars to sweeten the deal. Now, given this context, the Pentagon's almost $1 billion payout to prevent installation delays appears to be one of these concessions, as the U.S. government continues to scramble to keep its allies from buying the THAAD's top competitor, the Russian S-400s, which Turkey, interestingly enough, just said they were going to do. I actually just saw that this morning. Turkey just openly said, we're not a slave to the United States. We're going to buy the S-400s, and even hinting potential future S-500 deals. So that's probably going to be a story we'll cover in the near future when the U.S. sanctions Turkey, something like that. But interesting, as they're forcing people to continue to buy their more expensive, less effective weapons. Now, unfortunately for them, the U.S. taxpayers, ourselves, are the ones footing the bill. And this is what we need to recognize. With all that's going on, another $1 billion out the door for something that we don't need and don't care about. All so they can continue to bloat the military-industrial complex. That should frustrate all of you. Yet another story in a line of stories today showing you that they don't care what you think, and two, that they simply, everything they're doing, our Congress in general, is not only against American interest, it is literally for the interest of another power, for foreign powers. Again, the absurdity of screaming about Russian meddling and Russian influence, while we can see it right on its face of the real foreign influence on our country from multiple different angles. And it's all connected. Now, for the last story of the day, this is actually very important, and it's something that's getting a lot of coverage today, but I really wanted to touch on it. Nothing has, it's a lot has actually happened, but it's still being, it's a developing story, let's put it that way, about Chelsea Manning and what she's going through right now. And it is definitely something that has some chilling, it shows you the reality of what's going on in this country in regard to whistleblowers, journalists. And again, I just talked with Eva Bartlett about Kirill Vyshinsky and what's going on, He's a journalist that's been detained for 10 months. We talked about Hashemi, who's an American citizen that was locked up for an extremely long period of time without charge, without trial. That Derek Brose has done the coverage of the John Doe guy, the journalist that was in Syria that got charged as a terrorist. They just held him indefinitely with no charge, no trial. I mean, this is where we're going today. And the important thing to remember is that Manning, as well as Snowden, these people leaked crimes of the government. That's what they did, which means by definition, they should be protected under the Whistleblowers Act. And they simply weren't. No explanation, no justification. The government just said, no, we don't want them to expose our crimes. So we're not going to care about the Whistleblowers Act. That's where we are today. Whistleblower Chelsea Manning jailed for refusing to testify against WikiLeaks. Currently in jail again. And this story really needs to wake us up to what's really going on in regard to whistleblowers. Feeling that you have some kind of a safety net if you decide you want to come out and expose the crimes of a powerful person. The reality is you don't. And they've made that abundantly clear. Obama was one of the worst, even though he pretended to be fighting for the opposite. And Trump is doing exactly the same thing, despite all of his people thinking he would be doing the opposite in regard to Assange and WikiLeaks and all the things he said in his campaign trail. We're seeing the exact opposite. Now, Manning appeared before a grand jury, thank you for the super chat, on Wednesday, after being subpoenaed, apparently to discuss her 2010 disclosure of government and military documents about the U.S. wars in Afghanistan and Iraq to WikiLeaks. Now, again, a lot of people are trying to make this whole thing about the 2016 aspect, which I don't think has anything to do with this. This has nothing to do with the Russia aspect. This is about Assange releasing because he was leaked the information about them killing journalists in Iraq. And many other stories in regard to all of the killings and the drone bombings in Iraq and Afghanistan, revealing that they broke the law, that our government lied to us, was criminal, and broke the law. So by law, people that leak this information should be protected under the Whistleblowers Act, and they're simply not. She was tortured, for God's sake, because she released this information. Now, the subpoena for her to come back in and discuss this again came out 3 months after federal prosecutors in Virginia's Eastern District, where Manning was called to testify, inadvertently revealed that they had a sealed indictment against WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange. And we covered it at the time. I asked the question if it was intentional or not. You know, oops, we inadvertently released this. But the point is, the story was that it was an accident. And we found out that they did indeed have sealed indictments for Julian Assange and WikiLeaks. Now, Manning said after the hearing that she had been offered immunity in exchange for testifying, but that she insisted, that she instead had answered each question with the following statement, quote, "I object to the question and refuse to answer on the grounds that the question is in violation of my First, Fourth, and Sixth Amendment and other statutory rights." It's brave. Commend her. It's brave. And it goes on to say, quote, "In solidarity with many activists facing the odds, I will stand my principles." Manning said after the hearing, "I will exhaust every legal remedy available. My legal team continues to challenge the secrecy of these proceedings, and I am prepared to face the consequences of my refusal." The point being that it was a secret hearing, or a sealed hearing, so people weren't allowed to see it. And then it called her back in for another hearing, a contempt trial, as she was held in contempt for not answering the questions. And she called back again today for a contempt trial for the same thing, and that she's continuing to stand her ground and saying, no, I will not go against my morals and what I believe in all of this. Now, Manning said the grand jury questioned her about her disclosure to WikiLeaks, which was also the focus of her questioning in 2013, interestingly, when she was court-martialed. Manning was convicted and sentenced to 35 years in prison for her disclosure, which many probably don't even know, which helped expose war crimes by the United States. Bottom line. And despite that, she was still sentenced to prison. Just outright disregarding the fact that she's a protected whistleblower. But her sentence was commuted by in 2017 by Obama. But after she spent 7 years in prison. Now, Manning, then after this, after the first part, she faced a contempt trial, as I said, today. Now, after this trial that took place today, she was sent to jail again for refusing to testify to the grand jury investigating WikiLeaks. So both times now, she has refused to answer. And now because in the contempt hearing, she refused to answer, they've actually sent her to jail. Now, U.S. District Judge Claude Hilton ordered Manning to jail for contempt of court on Friday, which is today, after a brief hearing in which Manning confirmed she has no intent of testifying. She will not answer. She told the judge that she, quote, will accept whatever you bring upon me. Again, that's really takes some courage to do something like this. Now, Manning has said she objects to the secrecy of the grand jury process and that she already revealed everything she knows at her court-martial. And that's important to recognize that she already answered all these questions at the 2013 court-martial. Now, the judge said she will remain jailed until she testifies or until the grand jury concludes its work. So hypothetically, she could now be in jail for years because she's standing her ground as a legally protected whistleblower. Now, they're trying to get Manning here. This is what's really going on. They're trying to get Manning to basically say that WikiLeaks assisted her in gathering the documents she leaked. So because she basically she leaked these crimes of the government to WikiLeaks. And for those that don't know, WikiLeaks is simply a medium. They're not, I mean, it's journalism, but basically they're not writing information and rewriting things. They're taking information that they're leaked and using this as a way to protect the whistleblowers. That's what it was meant to be, a safe haven for whistleblowers to give their information out and not be exposed, even though it hasn't worked all that well so far. But the reality is, or at least for the whistleblowers, I should say. But so they're trying to get her to say that WikiLeaks came to her and got her to get these documents. It was all a part of it. So they can charge Assange under the Espionage Act. The Espionage Act. That's what this is about. Now, if in fact Manning did all this on her own, which she did, as she previously testified in 2013, then regardless of who she actually sent these docs to, be it WikiLeaks, the New York Times, the Washington Post, nothing can happen. No outlet has ever been charged in the history of the United States for publishing leaked documents. Back to the Pentagon Papers. It hasn't happened. So that's what they're trying to do right now, is forcefully get her to change her opinion so they can then charge her and Assange. I would think mostly just Assange for under the Espionage Act, which is what that's a big deal. And think about what that means for the Trump administration and their supporters who think that that's something he would never do. It's important for us to recognize what this means and what they're doing to Manning and what they're doing to all kinds of other people. The fact that they tortured her. It shows you that they are exactly what they pretend to be fighting around the world. And we're cracking down on people all over this country. That if even a fraction of this was happening in somewhere like Venezuela or Syria, it would be the massive story of the day. And otherwise it's being obfuscated because they won't talk about what the U.S. does or what their allies do. All of this today, from what's going on in Venezuela to what's going on in Israel, these are all U.S. allies and these are all crimes that they're covering for. So hopefully everybody can pay attention, spread the information, get this out to everybody out there today, because it's important that we continue waking people up. Thank you for tuning in. If you'd like to support this channel, you can do so in the links in the show notes by buying one of our t-shirts, Question Everything, on PayPal, Patreon, Bitbacker, anywhere, or just be here and take part in what's going on. I love you all. Thank you for tuning in as always. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.